Space heroes, forward onto Houston.
Who are Hell's heroes? Well, they come from the depths. They come from the shadow. They come from the fire. Every year, these Hell's heroes descend upon Houston, Texas, to celebrate heavy metal in its most lethal form. Hell's Heroes Fest, America's answer to Wacken, where metal fans gather to celebrate the sights, sounds, and unfortunate smells of heavy metal. Clad in studs, leather, and in some cases, tasteful floral print, Hell's Heroes is a festival worthy of the Druids, and today it's all going down as we dive Franny first into the pit. So put on those high tops, try to get through TSA with a bullet belt, and consider complimenting your face with some tasteful bangs, because today the Druids are going to hell. Storm Ruler, I like what you've done with the place. So stupid. Storm Ruler in Hell, the redecorators.
Oh, God.
They brought an interior designer in. They had to examine the energy. I like what Storm Ruler's done with the place.
I like it. I like it. These spikes that are longer than Johnny Holmes are very, very tasteful, and I'm digging it.
Welcome, Droomies. In this episode, we have full coverage of Hell's Heroes, a bananas fucking true as fuck festival that has left me with a compressed spine and a swollen heart. So let me just tell you, if this is your first trip with us, welcome in. We are your finest one-stop druidic circle for metal news, concert coverage, and esoteric body humor.
You know, every show, we're going to guarantee you this one thing. We guarantee you that you're going to lose some brain cells, but at the same time, you're going to gain some wisdom along the way. So make sure you subscribe to the show, follow us on Instagram, and reach out to us at druidsofdoompodcast@gmail.com with any questions or suggestions of stuff that we should be listening to.
Well, it would not be the Druids of Doom, Franny, if I did not first look you dead in the eye and say, what up, my druid, from another fluid. And perhaps, what did you have for dinner last night? Was it a nice kale salad? Did you have something with fiber?
I don't know about that. Yesterday being Easter, my family that came in from out of town, we went to a Brazilian steakhouse and I had literally all of the meats. Arby's doesn't know what it's talking about because I just gorged myself and had to be carted out in a wheelbarrow afterwards.
I thought for a moment that you went to celebrate the rising of the Messiah at fucking Arby's. I just got a little fucking concerned. Not a Christian perspective here, but that would feel sacrilegious even to me. Like, yeah, I'll take a nice 5 for 5. Thank you, Jesus. Come to Arby's, get the 5 for $5.95 on Jesus.
Oh,
on Easter. Wow. Well, Franny, I've been taking all my meals lying down in a fucking iron lung ever since I got back from this festival, because I took a battering at Hell's Heroes down in Texas, and goddamn, I'm going to tell you all about it. I had a lot of small Larry David moments during travel that just made me think of you.
Did you get called out by anybody for using the handicap stall? That's what I want to know.
No, but I did have to move on the plane to accommodate a family being able to sit together. And so I had to go sit in another man's already warm seat.
Oh, no.
And it just felt like there's something so intimate about that. I'm just not comfortable. Even in 2024, I know a man is beautiful. I have no problem with that. I'm comfortable with my sexuality. I don't want to sit in an already warm chair.
Yeah, you don't know if it's warm from just him sitting there, if he's fucking ripping ass on it. Who knows, man?
Buy me dinner first. Look, I'm old fashioned. Buy me dinner first. I'll sit all over that fucking chair.
Oh, shit, dude.
Aside from that, I'll just say in the airport, another just goddamn pulse on how old I'm getting. I think any of our listeners may relate, but you can tell how old you are by how hard you think airline music goes. I'm sitting there. I'm sitting there in boarding, and they're playing It Must Have Been Love, But It's Over Now, and I'm just sitting there like, this fucking hits.
This hits so hard, dude.
And they follow it up with Hall & Oates, Man Eater, and it's 4:45 in the morning, and I don't need any fucking caffeine at this point. They're borderline restraining me.
Oh my god, just playing banger after banger, 4 o'clock in the morning, caffeine be damned.
That's why you don't want to fly Spirit. Spirit's got all that bullshit B-side crap. You fly Delta, you get nothing but banger after banger, so... Yeah, It Must Have Been Love, But It's Over Now. Just started my trip off right. I'll just say throughout this whole festival, I took a lot of great video coverage. So definitely head over to Instagram. You got to see all this coverage of Hell's Heroes. And another thing here about doing this, making content is a goddamn grind. And doing it on your little fucking phone, I need like a jitterbug large screen, 6x8 tablet to make these fucking posts. Because my eyes are going cross-eyed just trying to make it real. And, Franny, I do some of my best work on the toilet. I'm fucking terrified. I'm fucking terrified of accidentally posting a picture of my dick when I'm just trying to make it real on Instagram. Who amongst you hasn't shit and accidentally almost went live?
I will say that it's come close very, very, very many times to happening, and it
cast
is terrifying.
The first stone is all I'm saying. Cast that first stone if you build a glass house. Franny, we're going to talk a hell of a lot more about Houston. What tours do we have coming up? What do our listeners need to know about?
All right. So we got a couple tours of note to let the Druids know about. So we got one you just told me about yesterday, actually. We got Enterprise Earth, Crowd Magnetar, Inferi, and Tracheotomy coming in April. Oh, I'm excited for that one. I'm going to have to figure out which days I'm going to take off because there's some real bangers coming up. But we also got Sanguis Sugabog and Jesus Peace with Gag and Peeling Flesh in May. Just another insane lineup that I desperately want to go see.
Just a band called Gag.
Oh, yeah, I know. Or Peeling Flesh. Or lining it up with Jesus Peace. That's another band name that's just kind of crazy to me. But they go hard as fuck.
Get a Jesus 2-piece at Arby's on Easter. You fucking degenerate. Your family are nothing but degenerates. You go to Arby's on Easter. I can't believe you.
It was worth it, man. We're trying to praise his name on a budget, bro, okay?
You're a goddamn embarrassment with the fucking blessed horsey sauce.
Oh, shit. And then lastly, but not leastly, we got Decapitated, Septic Flesh, Cataclysm, and then Allegion in May also. Again, May and April is just going to be insane
buckle
lineup.
Up, baby. After what has been kind of a quiet winter, all of a sudden the concert season is here, and my wallet is not ready.
No, 100%, man. And May's going to be a busy enough month already as it is, because I got the Legends of, or not Legends of Rock, that one rock festival in Chicago, and then a couple weeks after that we got Milwaukee Metal Fest. So yeah, May's just going to be just locked and loaded, fully booked. So I'm excited as fuck, but yeah, like you said, my wallet is not ready.
Well, stick around. We're going to have lots of coverage of these shows, and keep it tight, keep it loaded, and follow the Druids of Doom as we attend all these fucking kick-ass tours. What do we got going on in the news?
And now for another Druidic discovery.
It never gets old. No. It's so... I feel like I discover things in my daily life, and my inner monologue includes that drop.
Yeah.
It's like a Zelda treasure chest.
Oh, fuck.
Well, I know we call this Druidic Discoveries, but as anyone who's listened to the last 4 episodes in a row knows, this is the Bruce Dickinson Mandrake Project Corner. Yeah. This is the end of the line, folks. This is the end of the story. Our final Bruce Dickinson Mandrake Project updates. So as you know, the Mandrake Project is now released, and it's a graphic novel of the same name. Bruce provides a clarifying note about the album versus the graphic novel. And I thought this was hilarious. She's like, oh yeah, it's kind of related to the comic. And you can look at the comic and go, oh, I see it might be related to the album, but they're not dependent on each other. So you can buy the comic, you can buy the album, or you can buy both. All right. Well, thanks, Bruce.
Thanks for that, man.
Apparently, Bruce is a longtime comic nerd, and in part, he was inspired by the comics of his youth. So apparently, Bruce really identified with the Silver Surfer as a kid because they were both, in Bruce's own words, really pissed off at the time. So I thought that was kind of a nice little insight into why he made this graphic novel that turned into an album. And in listening to some of the press coverage, I'm shocked that he's still talking about the horrendous video game that Iron Maiden put out a number of years ago.
Oh God, that was bad.
But apparently that game had a side comic that never felt fully realized, and that's why he had to do the Mandrake Project. So stick around to the end of the episode. I'm going to talk a bit more about that. But Franny, what do you got?
Oh man, so you know the Droomies know that we're big fans of Big O here on this show, and Zampotli,
oh, Big O baby,
Zampotli have announced a new album, Beating the Drums of the Ancestral Force. Holy fuck, dude. What a name.
This is why we need fucking video of our show at this point, because nobody knows. I'm sitting here double front bicepping it just to hear Big O and Zampotli.
Oh, man. I'm excited as hell. So that's going to be coming out on May 17th. They got a new single out now. It's called Forgive Me, Big O. Please don't send a squad of mobbed up homies on me. It's called Tlahoyali. What's up, Jeremy's? Franny here with a quick update on the proper pronunciation for the track after reaching out to the boys over at Zampotli. Properly pronounced Tlahoyali. So again, Big O, please God, don't break my knees. All right, that's enough. Back to the show. Bye. I butchered the hell out of that. But either way, make sure you check it out because it will astral project your ass back into the past, you know, put you in a drum circle. Because when I was listening to it, I just wanted to beat the shit out of my chest because it is entrancing. It goes hard as fuck. And if that sets the tone for the rest of the album, I cannot fucking wait for that. So yeah, make sure you stick around for a coverage of that because we will be doing a review on it when it releases in May. Another thing, Rammstein is in a bit of a little hot water, actually, right now. They got hit with a plagiarism lawsuit on their 2019 song, Deutschland. And they got hit with a suit from a French synthwave band called Ninja Cyborg, who I never heard before. And they're claiming that they stole the track, the 2018 song, The Sunny Road. And after listening to both tracks, you can definitely hear... like, it's not even similarities. Like, they sound the exact same for the most part. It's kind of damning, to be honest. This is going to be a court battle. It's going to be a court situation. So could this be, like, another Vanilla Ice versus Queen situation? I don't know.
That's legit what I was thinking about. I can never forget that small clip where you got Ice. He's up there. He's like, ours is like ding, 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 ding. Everyone. Yeah. It's like, homie, it's the same.
It's the same. Exactly. So if it's going to be something like that, I don't know. Time will tell. But I just thought it was pretty interesting. You can go on YouTube and check out The Sunny Road from Ninja Cyborg and then listen to Deutschland from Rammstein and kind of decide for yourselves. It's pretty damning. And then last little bit of news I got here. Look, we're all fans of Motorhead on this show. And if you're a big enough fan, there's going to be a new illustrated book chronicling the man, the myth, the legend, Lemmy Kilmister, and his time with Motorhead. It's going to be called No Remorse, the Illustrated True Stories of Lemmy Kilmister and Motorhead.
I hope it's a pop-up book with like one page and just a mole.
Oh my God, dude, that'd be crazy. But the book's going to contain stories from musicians, writers, and wrestlers, including...
wrestlers? Holy shit.
Yeah, Lars Ulrich, Slash, Neil Gaiman, Triple H, and then former bandmates Phil Campbell, Mickey D, and Slim Jim Phantom. And each of these stories, I guess, is going to have photos and illustrations to go along with it. I'll make sure to put the link for this in the episode description in case anybody's interested and want to purchase it.
Slim Jim Phantom, for fuck's sake. That is the name of a man who I don't want to A, play poker with, or B, meet in a dark alley. That sounds so badass.
That is probably one of the baddest asses names of all time.
Seriously.
Like, that's a guy, like, you could see pissing off at a bar, and he's just like, draw against my hand, punk, or something like that.
That is Slim. Son, you're stepping on Slim Jim Phantom. You got a death wish. Good God.
Oh, shit.
Well, Franny, before we move on, shout out to another German band who's not in hot water. Shout out to Accept, because they've got two kick-ass singles out right now in support of their forthcoming album, Humanoid, to be released on April 26th. Of course, via Napalm Records, they've got a huge deal with them, so check out that. And with all that said, Franny, I think we are ready to burn the little hairs on our arms off as we step into hell.
Hell yeah, dude. I'm so excited, man. I cannot wait to talk about this. Ugh.
It's time to get into it. Today, we are going to talk about keeping metal alive. And that is a sentiment perfectly captured by the vibe, the booking, the unofficial mission of Hell's Heroes. I'm going to share my top moments from the festival and give you a druid's eye view of the events and Houston as a whole. So, Franny was not able to be with me at this show. I'm hopeful he will be there next year, but that's a small caveat that we've got to give out as I start by telling you that Hell's Heroes is now in its sixth year. And Franny, this is a festival that was like once a fledgling festival and has slowly, brick by brick, built itself up into having a cultish following. And now Hell's Heroes is transformed into being arguably one of the top heavy metal festivals in America. And honestly, after having attended it, it feels like it's got its sight set on bigger things to come.
Hell yeah, man. I just remember hearing you talking about it while you were there and saying, like, you feel like it's bigger than what it actually is right now.
It felt huge, man.
Yeah.
It felt huge. Well, Hell's Heroes was founded by Christian Larson. We got to shout out Christian Larson of Necrofire, of Night Cobra, and Darkness and Decay. Particularly Darkness and Decay has a release, a demo. It's new. It's called Orgasm of Golgotha, which I thought, that's a hilarious-ass name to be giving out right around Easter, Golgotha being the site where Jesus of Nazareth is believed to have been murdered. So, I mean, you're talking about a big release at Golgotha? Christian, don't go so hard. See? My goodness, it's so much violence in you, Christian.
Oh, my God. Jeez.
But Franny, I attended this year, which is its sixth iteration, but I would say Hell's Heroes started to really pick up steam around year three on a national level, because that's when Christian was able to nab Candlemass. And at that time, that was a huge get. I mean, Candlemass hadn't played a lot of shows at that point. So there's been an evolution from something small to something big.
Hell yeah, man. When they said that Candlemass was coming, because this was the first year that Candlemass was back since they played at Hell's Heroes 3, right? Yeah.
I think so.
Man, what a grab. I'm so jealous. Ugh.
Well, undoubtedly, Hell's Heroes personifies the allure of true metal. Bands are typically bands that have stayed true to the roots of metal, the aesthetics, the prioritization of craft over commercialism. And that's not to say these bands don't want to make money. They are artists, but they have to make a living. So they still need to make their nut. But they persist in a way that allows them to persevere without compromising their artistic values. That's fucking Hell's Heroes. Franny, a band like Rotting Christ.
Yeah.
And I love... This is the fucking Easter episode. I love Rotting Christ.
Dude.
But like, Franny, with a different name, a band like Rotting Christ could have really, really made waves. Now, inside of extreme metal, of course, they're superstars. But when we talk about Hell's Heroes and bands that have stuck to their guns, I mean, Rotting Christ stands head and shoulders above all else. So I'm trying to lay the stage for the type of band that you hear in Hell's Heroes. Now, I feel like this would be a really good moment to talk a little bit more about Christian Larson.
You know, before we talk any further about the actual festival or the cult of keeping metal alive, let's just kind of set the stage from Christian Larson, you know, the man himself. In a Decibel magazine interview, Larson states, "At some point, the old guard won't be around anymore, and it's up to us to carry things into the future. And after reading that quote, I think that kind of set the tone for this episode and where we wanted to go with it.
You can feel that sentiment in the DNA of Hell's Heroes. This whole festival feels like defenders of the faith. It's those metal fans that are fully vested, committed, and they almost have a zealot-like fervor for heavy metal. And I am these people. I make an underground heavy metal podcast with my best friend, and we're proud as fuck that we are on the cusp of being the 12th biggest heavy metal show on the fucking globe.
We're so close, God guys. Damn. We're so close.
Push us to the moon, Droomies. Okay. I just like the stock, okay? Push us to the moon. But Franny, Hell's Heroes, it's just a microcosm of the broader cultural commitment from metal fans and musicians to keep this fucking genre alive. We're going to unpack a lot of that as we go on this episode. But for now, let's take a small moment to talk about the city, the star of the show, Houston, Texas. Franny, give us a little bit of a disclaimer.
Okay.
The Druids of Doom solemnly swear this episode about Hell's Heroes, in which we discuss keeping metal alive, will make every good effort and hold the intention to not allow this episode to become a chopped and screwed Houston hip-hop retrospective. We will make every effort to not discuss wood grain grippin' or syrup sippin'. We will not declare Big Mo the rhyming songbird of a hip-hop generation. But we also cannot guarantee any of this.
Oh God.
Not talking about Houston area hip hop is like trying to be a Chiefs fan under 300 pounds. It's possible, but it's not fucking likely. Every fucking Chiefs fan looks like Andy Reid. Just fucking degenerates. Those barbecue slurping degenerates.
Oh fuck, dude.
Fuck, I feel like Stormruler could be from the Kansas City area, so if that's the case, I do. No, they're St. Louis. They are St. Louis.
Yes, they're St. Louis. I think we're good. I think we're good.
Houston as a city, it's just got a never-ending sprawl. If you had never been there, it's suburban. Area reaches, they extend far past the towering downtown. It's a massive urban area, and the line denoting city limits never seems to be reached. When I was in Houston, I would say its neighborhoods vacillate between sun-soaked slabs of concrete and quiet neighborhoods of modest single-story homes whose stucco exteriors are choked in foliage with a mausoleum-like fashion. Franny, there were times in fucking Houston where I felt like I was in a vampire town. There were times in fucking Houston
no shit.
Where I felt like there were eyes on me, but I couldn't see anybody. It was a bizarre feeling.
Oh, man. I lived in Texas for a little while, and there are definitely some areas where you're just like, what? Am I being watched? What the hell's going on here? But yeah, I totally get the vibe, man. I totally get it. Houston, it's a city of great diversity, right? Both ethnically and musically, both being the home to one of the most preeminent metal festivals, which we're here to talk about today, and also strong hip-hop traditions via the Third War.
The Third fucking War, baby. I'm talking Slim Thug, Big Mo, Paul Wall.
Paul Wall.
Who you got? Paul Wall, Paul Stanley. A knife fight followed up by a buffet. Who's winning the knife fight? Who's eating more at the buffet?
Oh, God. That's a tough one to pick, man.
I'm taking Paul Wall on both.
I was about to say, I think I got to go with my man Paul Wall on
both. Paul Wall is such a star. It is so hard to not try to slide in the DMs of Christian Larson and just say, would you consider for a moment adding a DJ Screw sort
just
of
get,
appreciation yeah, artist, dude. Someone. Houston just hits.
Just for one set, man. Just for one set. Let's
Houston's
get Paul
incredible.
Wall up in there.
There's just a lot of creativity in the region. Houston's music scene historically is pulled from American roots music, Cajun influence, and Mexican music traditions, and fucking ZZ Top.
Yeah, let's not forget. Let's not
from
forget.
DJ Screw basically inventing Chopped and Screwed music to Purple Drank Sipping Big Mo, all the way to Megan Thee Stallion. Now, overall, I'm really impressed with Houston, not only as a city, but as a music tradition. So I can say it's kind of a place I've overlooked at times, but I want to explore a hell of a lot more. But fuck the Astros. That's all I gotta say. Fuck the Astros.
Yeah, for real.
Terrible franchise. Yeah. Franny, tell us a little bit about why metal festivals are just different. That metal festivals aren't like concerts that are, they're not like a one-off. They're something else. Tell us about festivals.
Well, I mean, like the first thing that I can kind of say, and you've already touched on this a little bit, it's a vibe, man. The whole thing is just a vibe, and it's more than just the music. It's like the camaraderie and like the brotherhood and sisterhood on another level that you don't get at single serving concerts. You know what I mean? It's not just phones out, drones out, you know, it's everybody just completely embracing themselves in the music and why everybody's there. There's a chance for connection in a way, like I said, that single servings rarely offer for the most part. You know, people are watching on a whole new level. And like I said, it just embracing all the sights, the sounds, the smells, whether it be good or bad. And fucking the merch, man. The fucking merch. There's so much goddamn merch.
You'll go for broke at a metal festival. If you're not prepared, if you haven't talked to a local accountant up front before heading out there, you could dig yourself a big goddamn hole fast.
Oh, for sure, man. I've already talked to my tax man to see if I can find some extra money lying around just for some merch, dude.
Oh, my God. And I saw Omen out there. I saw Omen playing the Axeman, but now hearing you say that, the tax man! Like, I think the tax that's what you man. Need to listen to before you go to a festival.
Oh, fuck, dude. It's just a scale on another level that you won't get at one-night shows. You know what I mean? There's just so much to take in when you go to metal festivals.
I mean, 1,000%. And I actually, it's a lesson I will get back to later because I missed some of these things, but for good reasons. But before we come back to talking about the scale on a different level, Franny, on one side, when you talk about scale, you've got cough drops. And on the other side, when you talk about treating a little chest congestion, on that scale, you've got promethazine and codeine. Let me ask you right now, what do you know about syrup sipping? What do you know about purple drink, baby? This is Houston. What are we here to talk about today?
I know that if you're syrup sipping, you got to have the double styrofoam cup.
Some Sprite.
If you don't do that.
Some Jolly Rancher. About two-thirds full ice. I'm ready, Houston. I'm ready for you. I am ready to receive you, Houston.
Oh, man. Well, Franny, fucking A, dude. Well, you got a double stacked styrofoam cup in the background. What is that?
I'm syrup sipping, baby.
My Droobies, this man is legitimately syrup sipping on the show right now.
I am not syrup sipping on this show, goddammit. I want to be. I've always been curious. Houston, I said I'm ready to receive you.
Please. Oh, shit.
Well, Franny, the White Oak Music Hall is the venue where Hell's Heroes is hosted, and it's a huge complex. It's located 2 miles north of downtown Houston. It's got apparently over 400 live shows a year, and it's on a plot Holy of shit. 5 fucking acres. So it can accommodate over about 3,000 metalheads. And for me, it felt like there were double that there, but I probably have the Hell's Heroes glasses on right now. It felt huge.
Oh, man, that's crazy. That's so many shows a year. And not only that, but like I didn't realize that like the White Oak Music Hall was that
fucking
big.
Massive. There's a huge outdoor venue. There's an indoor venue. And at no time did it feel like it was too big for this show. Absolutely. The metal fans
sure.
turned out. But I will say one of my only criticisms of this event is firmly falling on White Oak in terms of they are some believers in shrinkflation. If you are not a goddamn trust fund baby, if you are not directly within 2 branches of the family tree next to Steve Jobs or Jeff Bezos, you are going to suffer trying to buy drinks at this place. It was costly as hell. So White Oak, great venue, very expensive, but the security, they were super patient. They were cool. And it was fun talking to them about the event and asking them, Has heavy metal won you over? Like, are you starting to feel something in your cockles? Are you starting to feel something in your guts? Yeah. And I gotta say, some of them were.
Hell yeah. You always love to see that, especially when you go to the concerts or festivals and the security guards, you can kind of start seeing them like bobbing their heads a little bit. You're like, okay, we might have a new convert here.
Might have a convert. Exactly.
Before we move on the White Hulk Music Hall, is it clean enough to eat a pizza off the floor? Would you eat a pizza off the floor?
No, these floors are, if you were to try to eat pizza off of these floors would absorb a lot into that crust. Even fucking thin crust, I'm talking deep dish, you don't want anything touching the floors of the White Oak. There were some real problems with mud. There were some problems with toilets getting backed up in the outdoor bathrooms, especially.
Oh, God.
Bottom line, you don't want to, I mean, I almost burned my shoes after this festival, so...
Talking
about the experience, Franny, I got a fucking golden ticket. I got a fucking golden ticket at Hell's Heroes, and it set the tone. The Druids of Doom were given a press pass, and once we got our greedy little hands on that, I was able to set out with the full intention of getting the best coverage available. So again, head over to Instagram, because I was able to get my ass right up on the rails for every set.
Moving up in the world, everyone. We're moving on up on our way to number 12. We got our first press passes.
This is how you punch your way to number 12. This is how look it. We're making some waves. We're starting to climb up to the contender charts here, people.
Man, when we got that press pass, and you were talking directly to Christian on that one. When we got that press pass, I was just like, yo, we fucking made it.
We got a golden ticket. And yeah, I mean, I truly... did feel, this is not the first time Charlie and the Chocolate Factory has come up, but I felt like Charlie. I felt like Charlie, and I didn't give a fuck about my four grandparents laying bedbound on a bedbug-infested sheet of cardboard. Fuck them. I got my press pass.
They're going to be out the door in a couple years anyway. Who
seriously,
needs them?
They're just the moochers of the family. Fans were fucking awesome. I mean, the crowd was full of characters. There were so many battle jackets that I was able to snag photos of, and I'm kind of embarrassed because I am the pink wizard on Instagram was there dressed as a pink wizard, but I didn't realize till afterwards that like this guy dressed as a pink wizard is I am the pink wizard. So anyway, I thought missed opportunity. We were two ships in the night, but it was fun to see a lot of, there was younger fans there, lots of really fun outfits. And as I mentioned earlier, some Hawaiian shirts. Shout out to Rob Zip, super cool guy. Check him out on YouTube for great coverage. Rob Zip, you were awesome. I made a huge mistake, Franny.
Uh-oh, what did you do?
Vanity cost me once again.
Oh, God, here we go. Fucking,
I got to look at it. I got to have my outfits. And I could not sacrifice letting my beautiful white high tops touch the muddy fucking environment. I mean, it was day one was torrential rain. And so the whole 3 days were muddy as fuck. So I wore my Vans the whole time. And that shit had my spine fucked for a full 4 days after the festival.
Oh, God, I can't imagine that. Yeah. But at the same time, knowing you being you, I totally can imagine that because, so you're definitely one to make sure
to articulately pick out
your outfits.
I gotta keep it fresh, baby.
Go to festivals and concerts.
And I'm encouraged because after going through this festival, I can tell I am not alone. There were a lot of thoughtful ensembles at Hell Heroes. Well...
So is that going to be like the next big thing, like metal festival fashion shows or whatever? That'd be kind of sick,
imagine if we could bring a red carpet through security. We'd have to schlep it all day, but the reactions we'd get to have people walk it.
Oh, my God. That'd be so sick.
That's an idea.
Like after they crowd surf and they walk down the red carpet between the gate and the stage or whatever. Oh, that's a good idea.
Shoes really cost me. And as a result, keep in mind, every one of these days, it's a 3 day festival, starts at like 12:30. I was there every day at opening, but only one day did I make it through the headliner because I was so beat up. I mean, I made it to every headliner. I didn't make it through every headliner. So
I directly blame
the shoes, but luckily I did do an Airbnb. It smelled like a rancid pancake, but
oh no.
That's not a totally unpleasant smell. It's just not quite right.
It's not just right. Yeah, it's just not right.
I also found myself in the age-old debate of anyone in an Airbnb, which is, am I okay to walk around this bitch naked? do I trust that I'm not being filmed? And at which point do you just say, fuck it?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Oh, that is the eternal question, especially when it comes to Airbnbs. You're just like, I could probably pull this off, but do I want to?
Can I air out my balls directly on this air conditioner safely? Because if you want 5 stars, I gotta.
Yeah, that is a stipulation in my Airbnb.
If you're going to film me, be up front and waive the cleaning fee, in which case I feel like this is fair.
Yeah. We've reached a term of equal equity at that point.
Day one was an absolute rain cloud. We got rained on a lot. We still had a ton of fun. I had a great time, but you have to sort of surrender yourself to that. And festival tip, either bring a poncho or surrender. I had to surrender because I did not bring a poncho, but next time I'm definitely going to do that. I was wetter than macaroni in a pot for pretty much all of day one. I never knew I could relate to Cardi B, but bad bitch rap, it's got some metal DNA. And once more, I was wetter than macaroni in a pot. It was fucking in a downpour, pot. Oh, baby. But days two and three, Franny, beautiful weather. So you lived in Texas. I mean, you know what the sunshine's like down there.
Yeah, yeah. It can get intense, but you know, when the days are nice and the nights are nice and cool, it's pretty fucking awesome.
I mean,
I would have to imagine, though, like the first day being rainy, like that had to have added some like additional ambiance to the whole thing. Yeah, baby.
It felt like we had to sort of earn it. Like I had to change my mindset from being like a little bitch to I'm here. I got nowhere else to be. I'm not going to die from a little rain, so let's pay the cost and enjoy ourselves. So yeah, like that first day of weather did kind of add a little bit to the atmosphere. Absolutely. Plus with some of those doomy bands, Candlemass closing night one, it was fucking perfect.
Hell yeah. I'm assuming that's the one that you made it all the way through, right?
Oh yeah, the whole way.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I can't miss
days two and days two and three were a lot warmer, and I love the sun, but a place like Houston helps me quickly remember how my particular DNA evolution was designed to peak during ice age conditions. Franny, I get sunburned by the light in my fridge if I stand there too long. And I'm sitting there.
Oh, man.
I'm baking, baby. I'm baking. So bring sunscreen.
Oh, fuck.
So, Franny, I'm just going to not, I don't want to belabor it, but I would be remiss to not talk about the top moments of the 3 days as brought to you by Wrecker.
Yeah, and make sure you go to the Instagram and check all that stuff out, because Wrecker got some incredible footage of everything. It was fantastic. Some of the reels you put together were just top tier.
Blowing up, being shared, being passed around, like the town bike. But he'll love to see it.
All right, Wrecker. So it sounded like you had a fucking sick ass time down in Houston. Why don't you tell us, like, what were your top moments over the course of the whole festival, would you say?
I mean, there's so many to think about. I would first just say the kindness of strangers, which is something I've always experienced at metal festivals. I know you've experienced this too, but people are just so cool. When I saw Solitude Aeternus, a guy next to me, we were vibing. And I also, at a moment of day two, it was so hot and we were just struggling to get enough water. I went up to the water station. I got the last cup and that felt so special. I got that last cup and I guzzled some water down and I gave it to another metalhead then, and he was so appreciative of it. So it was just a small moment. But when you go to festivals, people are just so cool.
Yeah. And like you said, we've both experienced that, and we're not the only ones. I'm sure many, many other people can speak on that. It's just another level of camaraderie when you go to that kind of stuff.
Camaraderie. Hey. Hey now.
Hey.
There are some hot dudes at fucking Hell's Heroes, let me tell you. Well, other just like, without belaboring it, just a machine gun rattle some thoughts off. Doro, she stole
the
show day one. And Franny, we're going to see her together at Milwaukee Metal Fest.
Fucking A.
Sodom played their first show in America since President Taft was in office. And I thought that was really fucking special. Night opened day two.
Fuck,
so I just want to shout out Pat Crawford of Night. That guy is so fucking cool. What a talented drummer. Yeah. He just beats the drums like they owe him money, and just a nice person to boot. So Night was a big high spot. And I would say, one, if I had if I had a valley, a low spot in this festival, I will say it's when I had to go to the medical tent.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, man, because Rotting Christ opened a portal to hell.
You son of a bitch.
And I slipped in. I got burnt really bad. They forced me to eat the eternally hot piece of pizza. I got perpetual mouth burns. Rotting Christ sent me to the med tent. It was worth it.
You son of a bitch. I was like actually worried about that. I was like, you didn't tell me about this, you asshole.
They didn't tell us about that, so... it was not appreciated. But Solitude Eternus played a reunion set. They dripped charisma. They were fantastic. Their lead singer, maybe through the magic of post-production, we'll name him. He was fantastic.
Hey guys, Franny here with another quick update for you. The lead singer of Solitude Eternus is Robert Lowe. That's all. Back to the show.
Candlemass played the first third of Under the Oak before they had to cut out due to probably city ordinance. That sucked, but I've waited my whole life to hear Under the Oak, and I got to hear it.
Fuck yeah, man. That's so awesome, dude. I'm so glad you got to have that experience, man. I know in the lead up you were super excited to go see Candlemass again, so I'm glad you got to have that experience.
Franny, what would be your white whale? What's a white whale band for you? Because that was Candlemass for me.
Probably Blind Guardian, which we're going to see in Milwaukee Metal Fest. Like, I'm a diehard Blind Guardian fan, and the fact that I'm getting to go see that with some of my best buds, I am over the moon about. I cannot fucking wait for that.
So, Franny, to wrap up some thoughts, I would say there is an excellent smattering of black metal with special call-out Necrofire, just taking big next steps in their careers. And so Christian Larson, my hat's off to him from an organizing standpoint, but just as a musician, Necrofire fucking crush. And it's accident. I didn't actually realize Necrofire had such a connection to Hell's Heroes. So about three episodes back when I was talking about how they damn near made me shit my pants in the basement of a Trader Joe's, I didn't know I'd be hooking up with them in three short months to get press access to their goddamn event. But that's full circle coverage here at the Druids of Doom. How fucking cool. Man,
you can't top that kind of serendipitous events, man. You really can't. Like, it's
long-term storytelling. We believe in that on the Druids of Doom. Jamie Josta, if you're not, look at, now we're looking forward to the future, Jamie. And we got Milwaukee coming up.
Have your people call our people.
Have your people call our people, which is me or Franny. Yeah. But we always answer. So, Witch Hazel, a band who get into Christian themes. I thought they had balls of steel to come out at Hell's Heroes.
Hell yeah.
And they were wearing all white with gold trim. It was fucking dynamite. They were fresh as a grapefruit spritzer. They just were nice. I liked them. Attic was able to sing as well in person as they do on record. And the pre-party was also a lot of fun at the aptly named Black Magic Social Club. And
hell yeah.
Franny, now having been to metal venues in multiple cities in America, I'm starting to see that metal clubs universally are in fucking stab you neighborhoods. They are never, metal clubs are never in a posh part of town.
No, why would they be? You know, thanks Tipper Gore. I'm blaming her on this one.
Yeah, thanks Obama for putting all the metal clubs in the dangerous parts of town. Well, all the headliners were fantastic. Tank was vicious as fuck. I had a great time. And would I recommend this festival? A resounding goddamn yes. I briefly mentioned the one drawback, which is cost of concessions. And the concessions do have a distinct lack of purple drink, but I had a great time. And if you get the fucking chance, Franny, we got to get this done.
Oh, yeah.
We got to head down there next year because this is a festival I think you would sink your teeth into.
Oh man, yeah, just you talk, hearing you talk about it, and we've talked about it off air as well. I think maybe depending on how this year's Milwaukee Metal Fest goes, I might forego that one to go to Hell's Heroes in Houston because it sounded like a just fucking straight banger of a time, and I'm all for that. I'm glad you had a fucking sick ass time at Hell's Heroes. And you know, Hell's Heroes is a festival that exists because of the insane passion of metal fans, the zeal like metal fandom that we bring and the maniacal commitment to the actual metal fans. So let's kind of just break it down. What makes metal fans so committed to keeping this genre going, which is so important to all of us? And how does the metal blood cult keep the metal cult alive? Like, you know what I mean? Like, how do we accomplish all of that?
Wow, such big questions only. The thank God the druids are here to pontificate, because... my brain gets locked up.
One episode.
Fucking mid-download for my software update. I mean, honestly, Franny, and I saw this so much at this festival. I've seen this at 70,000 tons of metal. I've seen it at Milwaukee Metal Fest. I hope to someday experience it at Wacken open air.
Fuck yeah.
But metal fans are just so goddamn invested in keeping this culture alive and strong. It calls back to that quote that you gave us on Christian Larson when he was speaking to Decibel Magazine about, hey, at some point we have to step up to keep this music going.
Absolutely.
You feel that at festivals, baby.
You really do, man. And I feel like at festivals, you see a lot of bands that might not be getting coverage that are just like kind of breaking in that you might not normally hear about. And that's really important in keeping the metal genre so active and alive.
I also feel like one thing that keeps us going is that, I mean, we're just so goddamn geeky. Metal fans are so fucking, they're so into this shit and the lore of it. I mean, we've done now two seasons, and at least three of these episodes are just about lore, whether it's the Norwegian black metal scene or the Floridian death metal scene. You can sink your teeth into the history of this genre like few others. This Warhammer, dude. This genre of music is fucking Warhammer lore.
It is made for 40K fans, much like myself. Spoiler alert. It is crazy, and you can follow, you know, the lineage of these certain subgenres back to like the roots, and it is crazy to see how it kind of transforms and how people really do sink their teeth into it. And not only but like, certain albums have like literal stories. They tell stories and lore, you know, like it's crazy.
It's Ozzy biting the head off a bat, or so we're led to believe. It's all the stories that we pass from word of mouth to each other about our experiences at shows. It's putting your hands in the air and doing a nerdy ass goddamn air guitar from one grown person to another grown person. I also think, just as a genre, one thing that's allowed metal to persist, and you see this in the lineup at a show like Hell's Heroes, is that heavy metal, it's going to give bands both flexibility to experiment while also adhering to a certain tradition. So bands have a lot of room to do what the fuck they want to do, but we've got a set idea about what the confines of heavy metal should roughly be so that we don't lose it in the offshoots of everything that can be. Metal's got guardrails, but all along those guardrails are glory holes that have been finally excised, covered with duct tape, and fucked to shit. So there's a lot of room to breathe.
Oh my God. Gotta unpack that one for a second.
Is that an edit? I don't know.
I don't think so.
That's riding the line of what we keep and what gets left on the cutting room floor. But Franny, in terms of what makes metal fans so committed, I mean, a big part of that, and I'll just fly through this, but fans are bands, and bands are 100%, fans. Man. 100%. This is 1,000% a genre driven by fandom. And so there's not really a line between who the bands are and who the fans are. They're the same fucking population.
Absolutely, man. I could not agree more with that one.
And I mean, metal language is not a barrier. Like, it's a global tribe. It's a music that is really inclusive and accepting of crowds. There are exceptions, to be sure, and we know which scenes in heavy metal have maybe harbored ideologies that aren't inclusive. However, if you go to a metal show, I don't care what you look like, I don't care how you identify, you are going to be accepted. And you're going to be accepted with open arms and probably free beers.
Oh, yeah. Lest we not forget the free beers just for being there.
But I think something that flies under the radar, Franny, I don't know if you can relate to this, but one of the bonding things for metal fans that keep this keeps this genre alive and going is this consistent disrespect for metal gives metal an underdog appeal. Like, you, if you're a metal fan, you've been regularly used to people having no fucking idea what the fuck you're into.
Yeah, and not caring either. You know what I mean? They don't take the time to, like, even care about what you're passionate about or anything like that. I mean, you see that in pop culture all the times. When you go into, like, a movie and there's, like, a shady bar, 9 times out of 10, they're playing, like, some heavy-ass metal music. You know what I mean? And it kind of visualizes the disrespect that you're talking about.
All the tropes that everyone in the dominant culture has about metal, and all the tropes that the monoculture has about heavy metal are in some degree true, but they omit the rest of the story. And you only get that story once you're inside this genre. And that story is that the bands and the fans are 1,000% passionate and welcoming. And if you want to get in on this tribe, the barrier of entry is extremely small. Just give it a chance. Go to a fucking show.
Absolutely. And we'll welcome you with arms wide open.
Oh, Jesus. You can't fucking...
I wasn't even making that connection, man. That's on you for going there.
It's the Easter show, and you're talking about arms wide open. You're telling me I went there? This fucking Arby's guy. Well... I'll just wrap this up by saying, Franny, I spoke to a bouncer at the Hell's Heroes Festival, and he was from the Dominican Republic, as it happened. And I asked him what his thoughts were about Hell's Heroes. I wanted to know, like, is this winning you over at all? And he told me, metal is really ritualistic. The fans get so into it. I've never seen anything like it. I'm going to have to get me a vest. And
fuck yeah, dude, that's sick.
Even as I tell you that, I get goosebumps. I think about it. I believed him. Like, we shared a moment. And, like, in that moment, after being exposed to metal for 3 days, he got it. And I thought that was so fucking sick.
That's so fucking rad, dude. Oh, that's so cool. You love to hear it. You love to hear that stuff, man.
Well, Hell's Heroes, I can't wait to come back. Hell's Heroes 7, I'm looking at you. And my goodness, either Hell's Heroes or Jamie Jousta, we're going to be talking soon. But goddamn, one of these festivals, whether it's Milwaukee Metal Fest or Hell's Heroes, Crypt Sermon. We got to get Crypt Sermon on one of these fucking bills. But I will bid you adieu, Houston. I can't wait to come back. And we are going to move the fucking spell down the line and give us a goddamn review and bring this Mandrake Project story to a close.
The end of an era for the DOD.
It really is an end of an era. I mean, Mandrake Project has been with us for basically all of season 2. We stuck with this longer than we did our scripted character subplot. Like, this is a longer form story at this point.
It's true.
It's fucking true.
It's true, man. We're going to have to bring the Colonel and the Private back at some point.
We got to run it back at some point. But Franny, the Mandrake Project. Droomies, it's been 19 Mandrake years project. Since Bruce Dickinson of Iron Maiden fame. Some of you know him just as a pilot. But it's been 19 years since Iron Maiden released his last solo album, Tyranny of Souls. For better context, Franny, that's a long fucking amount of time.
Yeah, dude, that's a long fucking time, man.
Let's take a look back at what's happened in 19 years since Tyranny of Souls was released. Now, first of all, the iPhone was released.
Holy fuck, dude.
Before this album, it's been since the iPhone that Bruce has put out a fucking album.
Fuck, man, that's wild.
Steve-O got sober.
That's so crazy, dude.
We went from seeing Steve-O take a beer bong rectally to getting sober. And Bruce is like, that's not enough time to make an album.
Oh, my God.
Franny, since Bruce's last album, Malaysian Airlines Flight 370 vanished midair on its way to Kuala Lumpur International Airport.
Holy fuck, dude.
It's been a long time, people.
That's a long ass fucking time, man.
At this point, the Mandrake Project is officially just a slump buster for Bruce. He just got to bust a slump. He just has to get back on the horse at this point.
Knocking off some ring rust.
Seriously, Bruce, you'll remember. It's all in the hips. You're not going to forget. But for those of you that are here and have stuck around this far into the show, You know that Bruce has long been regarded for his air raid voice, his imaginative lyrics, and his creative run has extended straight through 7 studio albums, if you include the Mandrake Project. So let's take a look at this album in depth, and I'll give you the Wrecker ideally seal of approval. Let's see what happens.
Oh boy. Plot twist.
Plot twist. Plot twist, Fran. Yeah, plot twist, Franny. Wrecker likes Bruce Dickinson, so we're going to see where this goes. I Remains my favorite band. Fuck. So the first half of this album, it's a lot of mid-tempo songs, huge choruses, huge hooks, right out of the gate. First single, Afterglow of Ragnarok. Actually, that might be the second single, but it's an absolute bop. It's got great chorus.
Yeah, it is.
Fun guitar work. It's memorable and upbeat. And the video, Bruce is having so much fun in it. And that's obvious.
Oh, yeah.
First half of this album is a lot of fun. You slip into Many Gates of Hell. It's another big chorus. It's another mid-tempo song. And it's just before we enter what I would say is arguably my early highlight of the album, and that is Rain on the Graves. It just has a grit that I think the rest of the album sort of lacks. Another massive goddamn chorus. So we're 3 songs in to the Mandrake Project, and we're being fed sort of a pretty typical verse-chorus approach.
Mm.
All of them with massive choruses. Franny, now this is where my first cautionary note has to be mentioned.
Uh-oh.
But Bruce's voice is showing a little bit of age at this time. And we've heard this on the last, arguably 2 Maiden releases. Now, that's not really a dig when you consider he's one of the best singers in the world. So when I tell you his voice is showing some age, he still sounds better than 98% of whatever you're listening to.
Yeah. Could just dance around us when it comes to singing. Absolutely.
The man's a fucking icon.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
If Bruce put out a pot pie, I'd buy it.
Oh, 100%, because you know that motherfucker would be so good, dude. So good.
You line that up next to Marie Callender's pot pie and a Bruce Dickinson pot pie? Fuck yeah.
I'm eating that Bruce Dickinson pot pie 12 out of 10 times.
I'm eating it before I leave the store.
Not even microwaving it, just
no,
fucking
fuck no.
Throw
it. I'm like gonna fucking suckle it like a popsicle. Fuck.
Just a frozen meat pie popsicle.
just treat it like it's a frozen pasty, just fucking suckling on it. This is how Bruce intended me to eat this. Fucking day. Fucking Bruce. So we leave the first third. I don't know how we got here. I really apologize.
I can't stop laughing. I don't know why that's so funny. I'm like,
eventually I gotta like put it behind glass because people just come in and start suckling in the aisles.
Oh fuck, dude.
Bruce, you spice it just right. So we clear the first third of the album. We're having, Franny, through the first third of the Mandrake Project, we're having a pretty good time. And it's at that third way mark that Resurrection Man comes in, and we start to get our first tonal shift, and they introduce an absolute massive stoner rock riff.
Oh,
and I was really surprised. A smoke-filled stoner rock riff in the middle of a Bruce Dickinson album. I loved it.
Hell yeah. I've listened to about half the album so far, and so far I think Resurrection Man is probably one of my favorite tracks that I've heard so far. It's so fucking good. So good.
On a production standpoint, I wish I could have been in the room. I really wish they would have taken that song and made it even thicker.
Yeah.
Because I really think there was an opportunity there to work with that riff to make something really heavy. But,
hell yeah.
It must be mentioned that through this first half of the album, we've heard influences from both modern and classic rock, and also some unexpected Latin influences and keyboards. And this is notably coming in on Eternity Has Failed, but I didn't expect that.
No, I wasn't expecting that either, but it was definitely a welcome surprise, that's for damn sure.
So now that we are on to Eternity Has Failed, we have to take just a moment here to mention that if you're an Iron Maiden fan, you will certainly recognize this song as being from the Book of Souls. And when the Book of Souls came out, it was released as If Eternity Should Fail. Well, now here on the Mandrake Project, shit's gone wrong. This is the Biff timeline, and Eternity has fucking failed. Overall, it's a much slower, more expansive version of the previous Iron Maiden song. I still really got a kick out of it, Franny. I'd never thought I'd hear Bruce Dickinson and synths kind of come in a little bit over him. I thought that was sick. And overall, the first half of the album is a lot more predictable than the second half, which really is a lot slower. It features some ballads, and the vibe on the second half of the album is just a lot more dark and gloomy.
Yeah, I haven't gotten to that the second half of the album, but I am definitely excited to hear about it and then go back and finish up the album for sure.
Well, Mistress of Mercy, it feels like one of the songs that was written way back when Bruce was sitting on this content. It feels like a song that's probably about 15 years-ish old. It's got that sort of hard, rocky, radio rock sort of sound. It's not bad. Facing the Mirror, Bruce is showing some more vulnerability. It's a simple song. It might disappoint some, but I didn't hate it at all. But it's the last portion of the Mandrake project that really showcases Bruce's grandiose side. So you've got Shadow of the Gods, which is absolutely a grower, and it crescendos in what I would say would probably be Bruce's strongest vocal performance on the album, coupled with Sonata, which closes the album. There's a hell of a lot of theater happening in the last third of the Mandrake project. So with all that being said, to summarize, we've got a banger opening to the album. Bruce is not taking a lot of chances on the first half, but the back half has some real strong growers on it. It's got some builders. And if I had to put a bow on things, fucking the man, there's some pressure here. It's the Mandrake fucking, it's the Catalina wine mixer, and it's the fucking Mandrake project.
It's the fucking Mandrake project.
We're bringing this season to a close with a couple episodes to go, but I would say it's an extremely diverse listening experience. It shows Bruce's maturity as an artist. He's very comfortable in his own skin. It's clear that he's really firm in his values and what he thinks an album can be. It's creative as fuck. I mean, the fact that this is both a graphic novel and an album, that's pretty ambitious, Bruce. It's all par for the course with a guy like Bruce Dickinson, who is a Renaissance man. I can really imagine when I listen to the Mandrake project that Bruce would be in a different time. He would be a bard, or he would be a poet.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. 100%. You can't not see that when you're talking about my man Bruce Dickinson.
And the best thing is, he's living that life in this fucking timeline. He's a Renaissance man. He takes his time to hone his vision. Even if it was 20 years, I'll give the man that when he puts out an album as strong as the Mandrake Project. He's a fucking heavy metal icon, and he's an artist that we can't lose sight of. And I say that because when I listen to the Mandrake Project, I have to remind myself, I'm listening to an album where a dude is not just trying to be a heavy metal artist. He's just trying to be an artist. He's not bound by what we expect him to do, because this album will hit you with some things that you weren't expecting. So to close, man, I'll just say, like, I hope I don't have to wait till I'm 60 for the next release by Bruce. Goddamn, because if eternity should fail, I'm glad to have lived in the same timeline as Bruce Dickinson. And that's really the truth of it. This guy has been special to me for a number of years. And this album, it's a worthy addition to his catalog. If I had to give it a numerical value, I hate that shit, a solid 8 out of 10. This is an 8 out of 10. And when you pair this up with what Judas Priest has got cooking for 2024, with what Accept has got cooking, this is going to be a hell of a year for traditional metal artists.
Hell yeah, man. I'm excited as hell to hear those other bands with their new albums coming out. It really is going to be a year for traditional heavy metal, absolutely. Man, what a timeline to be alive, man. You know what I mean?
We're in a fucking timeline, that's for sure.
Man.
Fucking hell, Franny. Hell's Heroes. I'm so excited to be back. It was so much fun to talk to you about it. Christian Larson, you're the shit. Thank you for believing in us. And all you Droomies, thanks for sticking around. Franny, I can't wait for fucking Milwaukee Metal Fest. Yeah, I'm going to kick it over to you. Thanks for doing this.
All right, Droomies, once again, thank you so much for joining us on today's episode of talking about Hell's Heroes and kind of the pump up for Milwaukee Metal Fest. Once again, we cannot fucking wait. Make sure you go over to Instagram, check out all the sick ass coverage we got of Hell's Heroes, and keep an eye on the horizon, because we're going to have more awesome stuff from Milwaukee Metal Fest. Again, if you got any questions or suggestions of music that we should be listening to, shoot us a line at the Druids of Doom podcast@gmail.com. And with that, make sure you stick around for the next episode of
Druids of Doom.
bad. Give me the whole fucking thing.
It could have been love, but it's over now.
Who are Hell's Heroes? Well, they come from the depths. They come from the shadow. God damn it, this dog. You're digging back there. Just fucking, you gotta have one of those beep, like those fucking ads blooper reels. Get my dog digging in the back. I'm trying to set the stage for hell. Got my little cute dog digging. Okay, now I think she's comatose.
Okay.
Another one in the dust.
Oh, we did it. Another one in the books. Oh, we did it. Milwaukee, come for you. Oh, we did it. Another one is in the book. Oh, here we go. Press passes.
He's a press pass holder. Whoa, Drew, it's come. Oh, watch out now. They're really backed up. Whoa, here they come.
Okay,
I'm going to... purple syrup.
Yeah. Oh, fuck. Okay, I'm stopping it.